Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:13 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 7th, and let's take a look at the size of the Fed's balance sheet, because it declined for the last 2 weeks of June. And the Federal Reserve has said that they're going to buy $120 billion worth of treasuries and mortgage bonds in every month going forward for at least the next 18 months. So how much they bought in the first week of July is going to be released tomorrow. It's going to have to go up if we're going to see any kind of confidence returning to the stock market. So that's, I think, something to pay particular attention to. But then when we look at the size of the total assets of central banks internationally, well, then we're presented with some additional information, because that, in fact, had been rising into last week. So it wasn't helped along by the size of the Fed's balance sheet. But there are two other factors that contribute to the size of the total assets figure going up. The first is the weakness of the dollar, which flatters the total assets of every other central bank apart from the USA's. And then, of course, you have the fact that the ECB, Bank of Japan, Bank of China, the UK, they're all engaged in quantitative easing of one form or another, and they're all printing their own currencies. Well, what we then need to see, when we look at stock markets, there is an acute reliance on the provision of global liquidity. The S&P 500 pulled back from the 3,200 point area in here today. The NASDAQ is looking a little bit overbought in the short term, and it was also in negative territory in here today. We can also look at the trend and say that every single one of the new highs has failed and dipped back below the previous one. And that has been going on now since approximately the middle of April, when we moved on to a new high. It pulled back below the previous high on every one of these occasions. And it hasn't done that yet, but it suggests that if the NASDAQ pulls back, it could quite easily come back into the 10,150 area and still be in a sound uptrend. The clearest consistency characteristic has been the succession of higher reaction lows. And the most recent of those is south of the 10,000 level and right in the region of the peak from back in February. So it is that level now needs to hold if we are to continue to see this being a reasonably consistent advance and for the breakout to hold. Quite whether the breakout holds is, I think, going to be very heavily influenced by the outlook for both monetary and fiscal stimulus. So we'll find out tomorrow if the Federal Reserve is in fact going to boost liquidity or whether they're going to wait for weakness. We've seen certainly that there has been a reluctance to pay new all-time highs and that they have waited for some weakness to come in and lend support to markets. So we may get some disappointment tomorrow, which would translate into some weakness in stocks. Then, of course, there is the big question about an additional stimulus. The Democrats have said that they are amenable to the prospect of additional fiscal stimulus. The White House is looking at an additional $1 trillion stimulus. There are a number of conservatives that are somewhat opposed to it, or at least ambivalent to the idea of printing more money and doling it out. They're certainly going to want to have some sort of back-to-work provision, because there is the well-publicized anomaly that people are making more from being unemployed than they would if they were working in a substantial number of states, although perhaps not quite so much on the coasts, just because of the higher cost of living and the higher wages that people have generally. We're going to have to see that there is some clear progress made on additional stimulus within the next 3 weeks, because there is obviously the significant issue that Congress tends to go on holiday, and that's equally true of politicians just about everywhere. And unless we see additional stimulus measures coming through in July, we'll have to wait until September. So we're at a rather critical juncture in terms of the continued demand for stocks that are richly priced and the willingness to continue to support accelerating trends. Some of these technology companies and the major caps have been clearly accelerating over the course of the last week. Tesla is just one of those examples. Amazon surged through the 3,000 level yesterday, closed at it in here today. It's a natural area where we might anticipate some consolidation of recent, really quite powerful gains. And just how much of a consolidation is likely to be highly dependent on that access to liquidity. Now, I think it is also worth considering that rather than simply focusing on the best performers, it is also worth highlighting that the Russell 2000, for example, has not quite yet been able to sustain a move back above the trend mean, and in fact has pulled back from it twice in the space of the last month. There is a succession of higher reaction lows, and the most recent of those is in the region of about 1350. Now, what I've been pointing out repeatedly is the commonality that we have in the patterns that are similar to that Russell 2000. Despite the fact that it's a small cap index, we have a similar trajectory on the UK, in Europe, in Australia. There are a significant number of indices that have pulled back extremely sharply in February and March and have been trending back upwards from those lows for most of the last 3.5 to 4 months. The FTSE 100 is locked still within a range over the course of the last month, but it still holds its sequence of higher reaction lows. The FTSE 250 has a very similar condition, but this is a similar condition just about everywhere outside of the best performing mega caps in the USA, where we have got very clear evidence of a breakout from a very well-defined range is in China, and there is the clear intention of the Chinese authorities to stoke a bull market in order to dispel any fears of an authoritarian crackdown following the imposition of the security law in Hong Kong. Closer reading of that security law in Hong Kong is clearly aimed at, or at least the ambition of the law is to sanction any kind of criticism of the, or at least not just criticism of China, but also any kind of support for democratic rights for Hong Kong people are now outlawed, not just for people in Hong Kong, but everywhere. And it holds out the prospect, although perhaps not particularly an enforceable threat, that anyone who criticizes China will be arrested if they go to Hong Kong. That's probably not a concern for most people, but personally, I like going to Hong Kong, and that's something that I personally feel the pressure on, that there is a clear censorship trend going on internationally, that people simply cannot speak their minds any longer for fear that it will either insult authoritarian regimes or it will insult populist or insurgent, really searching for the proper way to describe the rise of populism on both the left and the right. But one thing that is definitely a differentiator between the two is the propensity for left-wing radicals to support censoring any kind of discussion about their methods or ambitions, and I think that is something that is particularly scary. But one thing that we can certainly look at is that China is a country where bull markets are state sponsored, and it is in the government's interest to have a bull market in present, so they are supporting the stock market. It wasn't quite able to hold on to its gains in here today, but as long as it is holding the breakout to new recovery highs, then we are in a new bull market environment overall. Now, when we think about the Indian market, it is back right in the region of the 200-day moving average and has rebounded in a really quite admirable fashion. And it has perhaps unwound more of its oversold condition than other international indices. But of course, now the question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. And we're probably due some consolidation before it can in fact do that. The Indonesian rupiah unwound just about all of the big decline we saw in February and March. Now it is pausing in the region of 14,000, which was the region of the peaks back in 2019. Indonesia has got overnight rates of about 3.9%, and they are now engaged in quantitative easing. So they are looking at very clear trends of debt monetization. Now, debt monetization is something that is coming to countries all over the world, and it's possible because of deflationary fears. And the very clear fact that emerging markets no longer fear an inflationary outcome is a real testament to just how powerful the deflationary fears are in the short term. But the other point, of course, is that if we are at a point now where interest rates are falling everywhere, then there is a clear demand to capture yield, and that is likely to benefit emerging markets in the near term because they still have an interest rate differential in their favor. But the other point, of course, is that with debt monetization, we are in fact sowing the seeds of the next inflationary cycle. And gold is continuing to push higher in here, and it came right up to test the $1,800 area in US dollar terms. The futures price had already broken through the $1,800 area last week and closed above it in here today. So this is increasingly looking like a breakout from a very well-defined range. One thing we know about gold is that when it breaks out, it tends to run, and therefore the next area of potential resistance is the region of the peak from back in 2011, and that is unlikely to be the terminal point of this recovery trend. I think it is more likely than not we're going to see gold breaking out to new all-time highs in US dollars, and it's really just playing catch-up because gold has been breaking out in other currencies for years already, considering that it in fact broke out to new all-time highs in Australian dollars all the way back at the beginning of 2019. The Brazilian real has been in a downtrend for a prolonged period, but gold is still trending higher against it. Now, the other big currency where gold has broken out to new all-time highs is in renminbi, and it has in fact clearly consolidated above the previous peak and then is now also in the process of pushing higher. And that is despite the fact that the renminbi rallied really quite impressively yesterday. And it was in additional positive territory in here today, although it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance. Now, of course, 7 is a big psychological level for the renminbi. But the reality here is that the USA is responsible for the majority of global stimulus. And that is putting downward pressure on the US dollar. The issues about the supply deficit of dollars have been eroded. The interest rate differential has contracted, And then we have the fact that the USA is still battling internally and then also against the coronavirus. And other countries are perhaps doing better. So there are a number of differentiating factors that are detracting from the attractiveness of the US dollar. Perhaps the most attractive point about the US is the continued outperformance of the large cap tech sector. Now, when we then think about the oil price, oil dropped below $40 briefly on WTI in here today, and it was pretty much unchanged when we look at Brent. This is a consolidation. It looks like a first step above the Type 2 bottom. We're quite likely to see an upward break, not least if economic activity tends to pick up. But one thing that I think is particularly relevant is that when we look at the renewables sector, it is outperforming the oil price in a very robust fashion. The solar sector, it has rebounded and almost completely unwound the big decline in February and March, and it's coming back up towards the highs over the course of the last decade. It's being certainly assisted in here today by Sunrun. And sorry, I put up the wrong chart. And Sunrun has announced a merger with its biggest rival, and this is creating a cash flow. It's one of these companies that is offering free solar installations, but and then locks in a cash flow for the foreseeable future. It's basically an upstart utility, and it's the kind of company that tends to attract interest because of that cash flow, of the ability to lock in a yield. And it's another example of this clear design to a desire to lock in yield. It's one of the factors that is helping to support emerging markets. It's one of the factors that is also helping to support growth, but a lot of private companies are offering that exact same rationale. So the clear potential is that with continued support from liquidity and low interest rates and an abundant liquidity environment because of central bank actions, then it will continue to stoke interest in private equity vehicles, in venture capital, and also in these types of companies that can guarantee a yield from the perspective of bigger investors. And that is likely to be one of the sectors that continues to benefit. Then, of course, we have the clear ramifications of this, that we're going to see yields compressing everywhere. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting is that TIPS yields continue to compress into negative territory. Now, there is a clear inverse correlation between the continued support for gold and the compression of TIPS yields. So we are clearly in a negative interest rate environment. That is one of the most bullish factors for gold overall. But the bigger point, of course, is that while we have deflationary forces in the short term, this is much more about financial repression, because the monetary and fiscal authorities are doing whatever they can do to try and stoke inflationary pressures. And when they get them, they're going to be reluctant to raise interest rates. So we're going to be in a negative real interest rate environment for the foreseeable future. And that is the primary reason why gold continues to do well. But what we are starting to see is that gold shares are now starting to also perform. And GDX was able to push on to new highs in here today. It may be in the process of completing the first step above the base. If it can sustain this breakout, that will be the clear conclusion. We may also get some consolidation in the region of the peak just because there's a short-term overbought condition. But then we are also starting to see some interest coming through in the other precious metals. Platinum prices pulled back to the $800 area and have stabilized. And I think it is worth highlighting that that 800 area was an area of support all the way through 2018, 2019, and then all the way back to 2016. So it's an important area where support needs to come through. Silver has also started to steady within its range, and it is coming back up towards this $19 area. 20 is going to be the big magic number for silver. If silver can break above $20, then it will have completed its base formation, and we will have clear evidence that we are now into the acceptance stage. It is quite normal for silver to lag in the early stages of a bull market in precious metals, but then it does tend to outperform gold in the middle and latter sections of the bull market. So the completion of the base formation in silver will be a catalytic event for, I think, investor interest in the entire sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.